Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hey guys, welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, with
Jeff Rappaport.
And just a short recap on our last podcast. We talked about contract for deed, which is a strategy you used on that deal that we gave an example on. And again, it was a phenomenal deal with the way you guys structured terms. Today, we're going to talk about lease options. And Jeff's going to walk us through what a lease option is, why we would do a lease option, and then he's going to give us an example of a deal he's done using this strategy. So Jeff, take it away. What's a lease option?
Well, first of all, there are some similarities between lease options and some of the different creative financing that we're talking about. But here's the thing that you need to understand. As a lease option, you are not the owner, whether you're staying in the middle or you're wholesaling it to someone else. The owner is remaining the owner. And it is very simple. It is a rent situation, so there's a lease involved. And you are giving that tenant buyer, that's what they would be referred to if they sign a lease option, you are giving them an option price and term to buy the property, to buy. They do not own while they're going through it. They're renting. They're a tenant buyer. So what that means is that, so if I was to work out a lease option, here are the terms that I would have to deal with, the variables. One would be purchase price. One would be the rent. One would be the term. Now you would also work out so the term refers to both the lease and the option. The purchase price refers to the option and the rent refers to the lease. So those are pretty much the variables that you're dealing with. So lease options are really quite simple, but you've got to understand the difference.
Yeah. So it's just I'm renting this property and I have an option to buy this property.
Correct. So if you go back to contract for deed, which what we covered in the last episode, so the seller actually sells the property even though title doesn't change. So the seller remains on title, but they've sold the property. It's a taxable event to the seller. So, and we're certainly not going to, if we're going to go into any kind of tax stuff, I'm going to bring on some tax professionals because I am not your tax professional.
Yeah, we don't offer advice.
No, so, but I can tell you that whether it's contract for deed, subject to, all-inclusive trust deed, all of the owner financing, if you were to do that with the seller, it becomes a sale of the property, which is a taxable event. On a lease option, there is no sale yet.
Right.
The sale actually occurs some point in the future, and that is when it would become a taxable event.
Okay, so with contract for deed, is that a taxable event?
It is.
Okay, so there's a difference right there, guys. Contract for deed, there's a taxable event. Lease option, there's not a taxable event, right?
Correct. Not until the option is exercised.
Right.
Yes. So let's run through, and what I want to do, and we'll talk more about this in later episodes, but just like we talked about last episode about there's some different ways that we could have structured that deal. We could have wholesaled the deal, been in it and been out of it, never put up any of the money, got the money that we needed to give to the seller from our buyer, or we could have stayed in the middle where We could have still gotten that money from our buyer, but we're going to collect the difference in payments. So
between what you're paying the seller and what you're getting from your tenant buyer.
From our buyer in that case.
Okay.
From last episode. So you can do the same with lease options. So staying in the middle is called the sandwich lease option.
Yep. Or master lease option.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
So you can actually create the terms with the seller with the right to sublet the property to a new tenant buyer.
Yep.
And stay in the middle that way. We are not going to discuss that on this episode. And the reason for it is that it's not my favorite strategy. And
right.
Here's why. And it's very simple. Again, we'll discuss it more in detail somewhere down the road. But it is very difficult. I shouldn't say difficult. It is more difficult to secure your interest in a lease option where you're not on title anywhere. You just have an agreement. So when it's time that your tenant buyer is going to get a new loan, if you haven't secured yourself in some way, the seller's going to get your profit.
Right, right. Because you would need a notice of interest filed on the property.
At the very least. And yeah. But still, you only have a written agreement. There's nothing secured by it. So, we'll give you an example, but let's say we lease optioned a property for $300 and we're able to sublet the property for $335. There's a $35,000 difference there. And, maybe you got $10,000 up front, so you're still due $25,000. I want to know whether it's a year, two, three, whatever term that I give, and I work with my buyer to get new financing and get cashed out, that I want to know that $25,000 is coming to me.
Right, and not the seller.
Correct.
Because you already negotiated with the seller a $300,000 purchase price. You negotiated with your tenant buyer a $335,000
right.
purchase price. They put $10,000 down, right?
Yes.
Okay, take it from there.
So it becomes a little more difficult to secure your position in a lease option. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's certainly right. possible. It's just not ideal. So I don't love that particular strategy. So we're not going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about how lease options work. And we're going to talk about literally wholesaling them.
A lease option.
Yeah. And I would be amiss if I did not give a shout out at least to Joe McCall, who kind of really focuses on wholesaling lease options.
Right.
And I certainly have had a good amount of education from him. So keep that in mind. But lease options are really quite simple. So let's take an example. Let's take a $400,000 home.
Okay.
ARV of $400,000 after repaired value. It would rent for, let's say, $1,700 a month, which this is a previous example of ours, and I can't imagine what that house would rent for right now. So probably more like $2,300, $2,400.
Okay.
But let's go with $1,700 a month.
Okay.
Okay. The seller had a mortgage of $250,000. And his payment was $1,500 PITI, which is principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So taxes and insurance are escrowed in that payment.
Right.
Okay. So he was an out-of-state owner. So he got transferred, couldn't get the house sold for the price that he wanted, ended up renting it, was getting tired of coming back and forth and dealing with tenants and issues and whatever. So one of the first things that you should know is that one of the motivators for any kind of creative financing is debt relief.
Debt relief.
Debt relief. So he has two mortgage payments he's making right now, and one of them is somewhat covered when he's got a tenant. And it's not covered when he's got a vacancy.
Yeah, so, none of it's covered when he has a vacancy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. So the way that we went in and structured this was that, hey, we'll give you $1,700 a month in rent, Actually, we could have even offered them a little bit more, because if you remember from last episode, we talked about when you create creative financing, you figure out what it is that the property is worth, what the market rate rents are, but market rate interest rate is, but you can always get a little bit more. So on a $1,700 a month house, if that was market rate rent, it is not uncommon to be able to get $1,800, maybe even $1,850 a month. Don't get crazy, but you can always get more.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but let's just leave it at 17. That's what we're going to get. That's what he was getting before. But when he was doing it before, he had to deal with what?
Tenants.
What else?
Trash.
Maintenance.
Repairs.
Yeah.
Repairs, right.
All the things that make being a landlord not fun. So,
right.
Like the cash flow, even though it's kind of small. But, you know, hey, a furnace goes out, takes your cash flow for the entire year.
Year or two.
Yeah.
Right.
So, he didn't really want to do this. Now, he really wanted to just sell the property.
Yeah.
He wished that we would have just bought it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much the case 90% of the time.
Yeah. They just can't get the price they want.
Can't get the price they want. They need it now rather than wait 3 months, 4 months, whatever. Whatever the case may be. And there are a lot of different reasons why.
Yeah.
So what we did is said, okay, we will give you $400,000 for the property. So
purchase price.
Yep.
Okay.
We're paying full market value. Now, this is the type of home that was in excellent condition, but it wasn't updated.
Okay.
So if it was going to be retailed, and that was probably their problem, is that they wanted to sell for
retail value,
but the home was dated. Correct.
Okay.
So that was one of the issues, but not an issue for us. So we offered them $400,000. You could go in slightly under that if that's what you wanted to do, but there was just no reason, and we're not staying in it. So I'll give them what they want.
Okay.
I offered them $1,700 a month in rents.
Okay.
We would put together what's called a third-party escrow service that would collect the payments from our tenant buyer, make his mortgage payment.
Okay.
And then send him whatever's left over and document it all. So the tenant buyer has a paper trail. The seller has a paper trail. Everyone knows everything has been paid and on time.
Right, right.
Okay.
So that's kind of a key here to lease options, finding that third-party escrow company, right?
Well, to me personally, I would never have my tenant buyer paying my seller $1,700 when $1,500 of that needs to go to the bank.
Right.
Because if things got bad, that's the first thing that they're not doing is paying the bank.
The seller keeps the money. Yep.
Yeah.
They're not making the payments.
So now the seller's in default.
Yep.
The buyer's current, but the buyer has a problem because the seller's created
the
problem.
And then they get this notice in the mail saying you're going to get foreclosed on. And they're like, oh my God, what's going on?
Right. So there's a quick and easy fix. And that fix is have someone handle it all. So the people, the seller will only get the money that's left over coming to them, which is $200 in this case.
Right.
So that's what I would do. So now the goal is go find a tenant buyer that wants to live in this house.
Yeah.
So it's pretty – what you need to do is figure out what people are willing to pay as an option deposit. That would be the money that is the down payment.
That goes in your pocket.
Well, that's at least a portion of that's going to go in our pocket. And
okay,
we'll talk about how that gets divvied up in a second.
Okay.
But just so you know, down payment with owner financing, option deposit with lease options.
Okay.
Okay. So this is going toward the purchase price, even though they may or may not buy.
Yeah.
Remember, option means it's the buyer's option. They don't have to buy.
Yeah, they don't have to exercise, but they have the option.
They have the right to buy
in a given amount of time.
At a price within a certain amount of time.
Right, okay.
Okay, so in our area, typically, we can get a 3 to 5% of the purchase price option deposit.
Okay.
So we're talking about a $400,000 home. we're probably looking at somewhere between $12,000 to $20,000 option deposit.
Okay.
Okay. Five is probably on the higher end. So my if I was looking to wholesale this, I would probably be looking to make about $15,000.
Okay. Wholesaling this lease option.
Yes, wholesaling the lease option.
Okay.
Okay. So first thing is, so typically when I make this offer to a lease option seller, is that I'm not offering them any money up front. Okay. So no down payment, no security deposit, nothing.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they say, well, wait a minute, I want some kind of deposit. And I say, all right, so what would you normally be getting if you just rented it?
Yeah, for the lease deposit.
Right. So typically they would say 1 month's worth of rent, which would be like a security deposit.
Yeah.
So okay. I say, if I could get you that, or will that be okay with you? So in this case, let's call it $2,000 that they want.
Yeah.
So out of whatever option deposit we're able to get, we're going to have to give a couple $1,000s
to the seller. Okay.
Okay. So one of the other things, before we get into that, one of the other reasons why they may want to do this with us, well, one, we just took away the management headache for them.
Right. So yeah, they don't have to deal with the tenants or the maintenance of the property or repairs.
Now, keep in mind, too, a normal tenant that's putting down $1,700 or $2,000 security deposit probably takes less care of this house than someone that's putting down $15,000.
Yeah.
So typically you're going to get people that are going to take better care of the property.
Yeah, and have that pride of ownership.
Right. So, and then the other part that we do is we're going to make the tenant buyer responsible for all the maintenance and repairs of the property after the first 60 days. So the way that we sell this to the owner is, that when you have issues with the property, the furnace goes out, needs to be replaced, the roof's leaking, whatever, that these are things that can take your whole cash flow, use it up for a year, one
right.
time.
Yep.
So this way, it won't. So you've got someone, this guy was out of state, so he may have even had someone managing this property for him, which case there was no profit. What we're offering now is, okay, they're going to be responsible for water, sewer, garbage, which is typically a landlord type expense.
Right.
They're going to be responsible for all the maintenance and repairs after 60 days.
Which is a landlord's expense.
Right. And they're going to get the same security deposit. But ultimately, they really want to sell, and they're getting the price that they want, supposedly, no guarantee, in a certain amount of time, whether it's a year, two, or three.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty good way of selling it to the owner.
It's win-win. They get the price they want, and they don't have to deal with tenants or repairs or anything. I get that.
So we eliminate the whole potential for management, because there's nothing to manage.
Right.
Really, the only thing they have to make sure is did the payment get made?
Yeah.
So that's
In which case the third party escrow company will
notify them. Correct. Yeah. So, and then it's still an eviction if there was a default.
Yep.
So that's certainly a benefit of lease option, is that you can get the property back. When I say get it back, you still are the owner. You can maintain possession of the property back fairly quickly.
Yeah. Just by doing an eviction.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so what the goal would be then is to go find this tenant buyer, and we'll definitely discuss different ways to market for
tenant buyers
or other investors when we're wholesaling properties.
Okay.
But let's say that we found someone, and they're going to bring in the $15,000 that we wanted. They're okay paying the $1,700 a month rent. And, they need 2 years because their credit has some dings on it, and then 2 years to clean it up.
Okay.
So what we would have done is we would have taken the $400 that we agreed to pay the seller, and we're going to say up it. So
mark that up.
How can we up it if the property is only worth $400? How do we up it? So here, we create a new price and we up it. And as long as we don't get too crazy, I think that, you know, in our market, or the markets that we work in, that, you know, 5% is certainly doable.
Marking the property up 5%.
Yeah. Okay. So I would mark this property up and advertise it at $420,000.
Okay.
And because what if we get lucky and we find a tenant buyer that's got the 20 rather than 15?
Great.
Okay. So let's say we find someone, they only have 15, which is what we're after to begin with.
Okay.
We end up doing a credit check, checking them out, seeing what their issues are. We probably put them with a mortgage broker to have them look at, you know, what are the chances of them getting financing in a couple of years.
Yeah, great idea. So we're vetting our buyer.
We certainly are. We may even give the owner the right to pre-approve this person before we put them in their house.
Okay.
So we're going to do our homework. We're going to do a criminal background check.
Okay.
We're going to probably look at their income to make sure they can afford to be in this property.
Okay.
And we'll probably do some referral checks, you know, jobs, previous
landlord.
Previous landlord, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're not just going to put some lowlife in this property that's going to trash it and default.
Why don't you ask me how I've learned that over the years?
I can only guess.
Yeah. When someone comes to you and brings you $6,000 in $20 bills, there's something not right. So do your homework.
That's so funny.
So
so we vet the buyer.
Yep.
And we marked it up to $420,000.
Yep.
And so we found a buyer and we're vetting them.
Yep.
Okay.
So now we have a choice. So we can either just leave so that $15,000 comes as an option deposit, comes right off the purchase price. So off of the $420. So the buyer is okay with having a balance of $405.
Uh-huh.
The seller, we could just give it to the seller and say, hey, we just made you an extra $5,000. You could do that.
They would be so happy. Okay.
What I would do is I would create a rent credit. So, and again, don't worry about the details. We'll get more into them somewhere down the road.
Okay.
Just trying to give you an example of how this works. So we're going over 2 years. We have a $5,000 surplus. Let's give them a $200 a month rent credit for paying their payments on time.
This is the credit we're giving to the tenant buyer,
to
correct?
The tenant buyer, right? Yeah. Because remember, the seller is agreed to $400.
Right.
We're dealing with all this money above that. The $2,000 that we give the seller is going to come off their $400. They're going to still be owed $398. But all the rest is coming off this number that we created out of thin air.
Right.
Okay. So we're going to give them a rent credit of $200. What is that? Over the course of 2 years, if they got that every single month, that would turn out to be about $4,800.
Okay.
We can give a rent credit for however much we want, as long as it's not affecting the purchase price of what we agreed to with the seller.
Right.
Anything we've created, we can do whatever we want. This isn't going to be part of their down payment, and that's got to be made clear to them. That's not, you know, we can't show that as part of their down payment. That becomes a little more tricky. So, but we can take it off the purchase price. It's fine. It's like, hey, we're going to give you a bonus that every time that you make your payment on time.
Yeah. And that's their incentive.
Correct.
And it's a great incentive for them to make that payment because they're getting the property for less money.
Correct. So the seller will like it because they have an incentive to pay him or her. The buyer will like it because they get a discount. And we did it because we were hoping to get 20. We only got 15. If we ended up getting all 20, guess what? No rent credit.
Okay.
Okay? So we actually then take the deposit. We give the seller $2,000. The tenant buyer now owes the seller. We're done. We've wholesaled. We've assigned our contract to the tenant buyer.
Yeah, which is our lease option that we put signed
together
with the seller.
Yep.
We're now assigning that lease option to our tenant buyer, therefore removing ourselves from the deal.
And so let's talk really briefly what that means. We are selling our contract to the tenant buyer.
Yes.
To take our position in it.
Yes.
So, and our position is $400,000, $1,700 a month, 2-year term, that kind of thing.
And this is exactly the same way wholesaling works.
Yes.
When you get a property under contract and you assign that contract to another buyer, that other buyer is just taking your position on that contract.
Yes. So if you see, here we contracted to buy a house for more than probably what they could even sell the house for, because they did try to sell it and they didn't get it.
Yes.
We were able to lease option it, give them basically everything that they wanted, plus some. I mean, no maintenance, no repairs, no property management.
Great deal.
A buyer that has some skin in the game. So
yeah, exactly. Someone who's going to take care of the property and take pride of ownership.
Yep. And we gave the tenant buyer a chance to, hey, things are appreciating right now. This same house could, you know, be worth $440,000 in two, 3 years.
Right.
So, you know, we're getting you a good price now.
Yep.
We're treating you as a homeowner, so you're working toward that home ownership.
Right.
We've put you in a program where we have a mortgage broker working with you to help you get financing.
Right.
And, you know, you have a house that you feel like is yours.
Yes.
So, don't overthink this. People do this all the time. And okay. I've been doing this since 2000. So not the wholesaling part, but lease optioning the property out to people. So a couple of really key things to note before we wrap this up is that there's a direct correlation with people getting a new loan and treating the property well with how much money they put down, the option deposit. Mm-hmm. So if you start getting desperate and you take $2,000, okay, you should not expect this to work out very well.
For an option deposit.
Correct.
Yeah. Because that person just doesn't have enough vested
skin
interest.
In the game.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if you were to get $40,000 from this person, chances are they're going to do everything that they agreed
exactly,
to do.
Yeah, exactly, because they lose that money.
Correct.
So someone is, you know, would sooner walk away from $2,000 than they would $40,000.
Yeah, not likely.
Right.
So the option deposit is really one of the keys. Plus, it's where you get paid. So whatever you're able to negotiate with the seller, again, if you notice a trend, we talked about trying to get in light, those down payments or the option deposits, you know, the more you have to give to the seller means that there's less for you.
Yes.
So the better you're able to negotiate, that particular variable tends to pay you better. So,
okay.
Do you have any questions as far? I mean, it's a fairly straightforward process. You know, there are some details to it. You know, how to find it, the tenant buyer, how to negotiate, which is stuff where we're going to go into depth throughout.
Yeah. So just to kind of recap. We find someone who is an out-of-state owner. They moved.
Doesn't have to be out-of-state.
Okay, but in this scenario,
yes.
I mean, they moved out of state. They got transferred for, you know, for their job. They have this property they wanted to sell for retail of $400,000. They couldn't do it because it was just dated, and there were just other houses in the neighborhood that people can buy for the same price that were just nicer.
Yep.
So the house is in good condition. It's rent ready. You come in and say, hey, we're going to find you a tenant buyer. You disclose that up front, correct?
I do disclose that. The seller absolutely knew everything that we were going to do. The only thing I don't, and he may or may not have known, but it's not something I disclose, is how much money we would make.
Yeah.
To me, that's really none of his business.
Right.
But if he wanted to know, I would just tell him.
Yeah. Well, and you say, look, we're going to find you a tenant buyer, and basically our fee for this is whatever we can add on on top of that. And usually the seller's going to be okay because you're giving them the price they want.
I gave them everything they wanted.
And the payment they
wanted.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So you guys, you find this tenant buyer. They come in with $15,000 down. You give $2,000 of that over to the seller. And then you're out of the deal because you've assigned that lease option to that tenant buyer. Okay.
Yep.
So what's So when you vet these people, do you also put them in a some kind of credit repair program? Because I know I've heard of that where, you know, it's a requirement of that tenant buyer to be put in a credit repair program so that there is some, you know, proactive steps they're taking on their end. Is that something you do?
It's possible. It's certainly depending on what's wrong with their credit and how much needs to be fixed. It's something that, yes, could be a suggestion, and it may be a requirement for them to be able to get into the property. So my mortgage broker is going to be the one that's going to tell me if they need that or not.
Okay, great, great suggestion there. So bringing in the mortgage broker is a must, absolutely, so that they can get lined up for that.
The mortgage broker part is awesome because – first of all, they don't have to pull the credit. That would be the expense to the mortgage broker. That's how it used to be done years ago. Now it's I can actually have the prospective tenant buyer pay for their own credit report, and it gets emailed to me directly. I see it. I can look it over. I can then talk to my mortgage broker about it. I'll get their permission to do so.
Right.
And he'll tell me, look, this is going to take like at least a year. They certainly should be able to get it done within 2 years, or they may need 3 years. These are the things that need to get done. And I suggest that they do it this way. Now, why would the mortgage broker be willing to do all that for each of these possible tenants?
Because they're potential clients.
Well,
they're
going to make money. I'm going to put my mortgage broker directly in touch with them. Mm-hmm. He's going to tell them what they have to do.
Yeah.
And he's going to get to do the loan, whether it's in a year or two or three.
When they get that done.
Yeah. And you start filling a pipeline full of these. Yeah. You know, they're happy to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know any mortgage broker that would turn that down.
No. It's not a hard job for them to do up front.
Great, great. So just to recap, you found a property that – was this a rental that you guys just called on initially? Someone
I don't remember how we got it. It might have been. Okay. It might have been a rental.
But so someone could post their property for rent and you know they might have tried to sell it and they weren't able to because they just wanted too much for the condition it's in. Because it, you know, it might be dated, but they did need that $400,000 for whatever reason, or they're stuck on that number. So you come in and say, okay, we're going to find a tenant buyer, and they're going to buy this property for that, for what you want. So we're going to give that to you, and we're going to make your payments, and that we're going to roll all of this through a third-party escrow company. So you market for that tenant buyer, you take that down payment of $15,000. And you give two of it to the seller just like they want it. And it's a win-win scenario for everyone, especially if the tenant buyer ends up purchasing the property in, you know, 2 years. And, you know, in today's market, they're going to have equity there just because of the appreciation.
Even with us raising the price.
Especially here in Utah.
Yeah.
So great example. My last question would be, does this work on lower end properties? Could you do the same thing for, you know, $100,000, $150,000 properties, or is it not worth it at that point? What are your thoughts?
So, first, let me point out something. This was a house that you never owned. You had never, you know, you had no interest in it. You have no money involved in it. And, you know, you went and turned around and made like $13,000. Not bad.
Right.
So, this is what my suggestion would be is, yes, you can do lease options in lower price range. I would say don't.
Okay.
And here's, you know, quick little story. So we work in some smaller cities in Idaho. We did a $110,000 lease option. It was so much more difficult to pull $4,000 out of someone for a $100,000 property in that area than it was to get $15,000 on this or $18,000 on a $500,000 home. We made four. I had to give $1,000 to the seller. We made $3,000 on that deal.
Yes.
And the chances of it actually going from start to finish are, I'd be surprised if it was 5% or better. okay. It's going to be a problem. And most of our calls were I'm on Section 8 housing. Can you reduce the rent? So you're dealing with a different type of mentality, and a different type. Plus, these are the kinds of people when you can barely afford, you know, $800 or $1,000
for rent.
Anything that happens in your life to affect your finances, you have a car repair. If you're living in this house and you've got to fix the furnace,
they're probably not going to have the money.
Yeah, they're living paycheck to paycheck, and things get screwed up in a hurry.
Okay,
someone that's dealing with a $1,700 or $2,000 a month payment, hopefully, is in a little better situation so they can better handle that. Plus, it's the same amount of work. Actually, I would tell you it's more work to deal in the lower price range than the. When I say higher price range, I would say to target the median price range of that area and up.
Above.
And here, Utah's about a median price range of $300,000. I like that price range. You should be making at least 10 grand on that kind of deal.
From those lease options.
Okay. I would say that lease options work really well up to maybe $600,000, maybe even $700,000 in this area. Beyond that, I don't know, because I think most people would rather own when you're dealing in that type of price range and you're already putting down that much money.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that was a great example of lease option, wholesaling a lease option. I hope that was simple enough for you guys out there. And thank you, Jeff, for sharing that with us. And really, you're just deploying the skills and your knowledge and just helping the seller without having really, any real kind of interest in it.
Most likely, when we made this offer, we probably made several offers, including at least one owner financing offer, maybe even a cash offer. And we let the seller choose which worked best for him.
Yeah,
they all work for us. Yeah. So
there it is. Once again, multiple offers.
Yeah.
Just making multiple offers.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, great. We look forward to kind of diving in more deep on some other strategies in the next episode. This is episode number 2, for those of you who are keeping track. What are we going to talk about our next one, Jeff?
We're going to talk about all-inclusive trust deed, and then probably the episode after that, subject to, and then we'll get to seller carry back. So that'll be like the next three episodes.
Now we're getting real.
Yeah.
Now it's getting real, guys.
Yep.
All right. I'm excited. Thanks so much, Jeff. And thanks to all of our listeners out there. I hope we've added a tremendous amount of value to you guys in the way that you can go out and find these deals and structure them. Any last words, Jeff?
Nope. Look forward to the next episode.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.